Begin Podfix Network transmission in 3, 2, 1.
Suckers in the back seat. Mama's home hungry.
Mark my words. Michael Knight will die.
I am the voice of Knight Industry 2000's microprocessor.
You wish to eat. You wish to drink. You wish to reproduce.
Yeah.
Which one first?
Excuse me, I was if I could get a Hill student loan.
I think you're in the wrong department.
Discipline has never been a problem, my dear.
Hang on to your fenders, pal.
Hey, Greg.
Hey, Dave.
How's your eggnog tasting, buddy?
Oh, I haven't even sipped it yet. I was waiting to start. You ready? Here, I got a big glass. I made a pint, and I filled about a third of it with brandy. So here we go. What? Do you have some?
Hold on. Before you jump in, I want to welcome our guest tonight, so he can partake in the first sip with us. Are you ready?
Oh yes, yes.
Because we do have a guest tonight. I'm not gonna sugarcoat things. I'm going to welcome him right to the show so he can jump in and talk about it. Joining us for the first time on the show, and we are really excited to hear from him, is the host of the We All Have a Story podcast and soon-to-be-released Descripted podcast, a very dear friend of mine. I've shared the stage with him numerous times, and I can't wait till COVID is over so we can do it again. Mr. Randy Hunt, welcome to the show, my friend.
Hi, guys.
Hey, Randy.
Hi, Greg.
How are you doing on this blustery, bittery cold evening?
I'm doing great. I mean, I had water leaking from my kitchen ceiling yesterday, but it's not leaking today, so that makes me happy.
Was it leaking over your sink?
Good. Did you get it figured out, or you just have a bucket in the kitchen?
Oh no, right under the floor.
Oh, fantastic. Fantastic. That's awesome. Randy, before we kind of jump into the show tonight, let's toast ourselves. We promised our listeners that we were going to be drinking to some eggnog and brandy, and I think we all have our glasses.
Cheers,
correct?
Yes. I do indeed.
All right, here we go, guys. Let's take our first sip. Cheers, everybody. Merry Christmas. Oh gosh, that tastes
good. Oh, that is good.
Mm. All the brandy was on the top of mine.
Woo! I mixed mine.
Of course,
I had a little bit down near.
I use the pour technique to mix it. Hopefully, you know, I put the brandy in, then I pour the eggnog in kind of a circular motion, hoping that it would agitate it all together. Inevitably, it doesn't, and I should use a spoon, but I don't. So there you go. I got my brandy heavy, top heavy eggnog glass.
Greg, how big of a glass are you drinking out of tonight?
Oh, it's a pint glass.
Randy, how big is your glass tonight?
Oh, mine's like a little 8-ounce glass.
What kind of eggnog are we drinking tonight? I got the fancy stuff. I went with the Smiling Hill Farms eggnog this evening. What's everybody else drinking?
Oh, I went the opposite. I got the cheap Hannaford brand.
Ooh, hey, I got the same too. I got the Oakhurst. The Oakhurst brand, it's probably the Hannaford brand, but oh, you know, Hannaford.
Uh-oh. You're kind of in the middle. You're between.
Yeah, I find it's pretty good. But after having like the yardstick to measure everything by, the golden eggnog, you know, that still comes in the carton. I think that is by far the creamiest and thickest nog on the market.
Greg, have you had the Smiling Hill Farms eggnog?
I don't recall. I don't believe I have.
Okay, well, this is about as thick as it's going to get. Like, this is like, it's basically almost to the point of like frozen eggnog. Before it actually, it's so thick going down. It's so flipping good.
You know what might be kind of fun is to try to make a frap. You know, like the Friendly's fraps that they used to, but out of eggnog. So it's super thick, almost like eggnog ice cream. Oh no, get cookie dough ice cream and blend it with eggnog.
Oh, I'm gonna do that this weekend. Hey, Greg.
Hey, Dave.
Welcome to Champa and Klein, the Knight Rider Years, a podcast by two friends who share a love of classic 80s television. I'm your host, Dave Champa.
I am your other host, Greg Klein.
Now, listen, guys, if you're new to the show, the basic idea is that Greg and I choose a classic show from the 80s and we dissect it episode by episode. While we do poke fun at these shows a lot, it is out of complete love and admiration for an era that can never be replicated. Occasionally, Greg and I will create our own side story within an episode. And I'll tell you right now, after tonight's episode, we're going to have hell of a lot of side stories and diversions to take us to other places. Within this episode, but this comes into play a lot throughout the run of our shows. Greg, I'm going to forego you for a minute. Randy, tell us a little bit about your history with Knight Rider. Did you grow up with this show?
I I did. I think it, when did it start? 82?
The year that I was born, 1982.
82, yeah. So I was 10. I distinctly remember, the only real memory that I have is A, sitting down and watching it every week, and B, we played Knight Rider on the playground, and I couldn't really tell you what that entailed other than us running around and saying Turbo Boost, which I think is something I called and mentioned on your hotline there a few months ago. That's the extent of my Knight Rider. It's been that many years since I've watched the show, and then more recently I've been listening to your podcast.
Were you one of those lucky children that had the Knight Rider big wheel?
Oh, I didn't have the Knight Rider big wheel. I think I was probably a little too old for that at that point.
I didn't. Did they really make a Knight Rider big wheel?
Of course they did.
Oh boy, I'm gonna have to find it.
And a Knight Rider BMX bike, everything.
Okay, well that's my new goal. I'm going to have to find one of those Knight Rider. You're going to see me on the news riding down 295 in a Knight Rider's big wheel. That's it. Done. End of story. That's how it's going to work.
You can follow closely behind by a Maine State
trooper.
You're going
to insist that Kristen tows you?
Oh, my God. I mean, off the back of my car with Kristen driving 65 down the highway. Ripping the tires out. Oh, yeah.
Oh, it'd be like one of those drift carts, you know? You'd be able to do like Tokyo Drift in your big wheel. And like wear holes in the tires instantly because they're just plastic.
I mean, we all did it.
That's true. That's absolutely true. Now, Randy, what is your fondest memory of the show? Do you remember anything about it up until the point when you watched this episode earlier in the week?
I think my fondest memory was honestly at the time just thinking how cool David Hasselhoff was.
Oh boy,
and how technology played such a huge part in it. And of course, you know, technology ended up being a lot of my career path. And so, you know, the fact that he could talk into a watch and his car could talk back to him and, you know, do a whole host of other things that I'm not really sure are even remotely possible that a watch could do. Just, I loved the show. It was just a fun show to watch.
Yeah. And I think so, Greg, you can jump in here too. I think at some point, you know, Greg and I have no knowledge of this show going into it when we started it 2 years ago. But looking at it through the lens of 2019, 2020 is just a vastly different experience than I think somebody like you, who was, you know, 10, between the ages of 10 and 14 when the show was on the air. I mean, it is a vastly different experience watching this on a big screen TV as opposed to, you know, back in the 80s, you know, we didn't have the big screen TV. So you probably had the little tiny tube TV. It's just an interesting experience at watching it now and really picking apart the stuff that they just kind of tried to hide from the viewer.
Yeah, we had probably like a 13-inch color tube TV, and you know, I had like a little black and white, maybe 10-inch TV in my bedroom. So always tried to get Knight Rider on the color TV for sure.
Oh, absolutely. Greg, what were you going to say?
I don't have memories of it while the show was on, because like you did, I was 81, so I was only like, I don't know, 5 when the show was off the air. But I do remember watching reruns of it not terribly long after that. I don't know when they started doing reruns, but I do remember it as a kid. So like it was, you know, it was still sort of fresh. But you're right. Watching it now on a 42-inch flat screen versus like a maybe a 27-inch like CRT. Like it's entirely different. There are things in it that they had no intention of you ever noticing. And, you know, I think that's fine, but I think it also shows that the effort they put into it, that the things that you can see now, there's no way you would have been able to see way back when. So way back when, yeah, in the 80s. Okay. But, it's definitely a different experience, but it's still good. You see a different version of the show, and you can appreciate it for different things, I think.
And speaking of things that you you don't notice, I mean, I've got like the 55-inch TV now, like I, you know, and it was a 15-inch TV when I was a kid. I think the thing that most jumped out at me in the first few episodes I was watching more recently was when Kit pulls up with nobody driving him, and you get just a quick glimpse of somebody dressed like a car seat.
Yes.
And the arms, and it just, it's very subtle and quick, but
you're like,
I was dying. dying.
But
and I don't know if you see that ever again, but it happened in that one episode early on.
It's so true. Now that you know, like looking at it now, we're going into this kind of knowing some of the tricks that they used just from, you know, time passing, you're reading about it. Now you're watching it and you're looking for these things and you can clearly see it. You're like, wow, that driver's seat's really thick. Like, that's okay. Yeah. Cause there's somebody in it driving the car, you know, and it's little things like that where you see the tricks, you know, and I think it's really fun, but it's almost like watching it behind the scenes while, you know, watching the episode. It's really fun. Like, I like knowing those tricks now and being able to see it.
And I think, you know, we've been, so we're winding down the run of the show. So this is the third to last episode. So we've got two more episodes in the original run, and then we got to go back to the middle of season four to finish out the run. But, you know, after this, we're 3 weeks away from closing out the series. And man, I just, this show, I think, will always hold a special place. And I say this every week, it really will hold a special place in my heart of all the shows that we do in the past or even moving forward. I really can't get enough of this television show.
It's so much better than MacGyver. In all like the right ways, though MacGyver was fantastic, I think it just got diluted with seven seasons worth. And I think Knight Rider is, especially this last season, though people still say it's not the best, it's fantastic, but probably not for the right reasons. For our, you know, 2020 reasons to watch it. But yeah, absolutely loving this show.
No, absolutely. Now, Randy, were you familiar with MacGyver? Did you watch that when it was on the air back in?
Oh, heck yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. I mean, a man that can fix anything with some string and some bubble gum is my man, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. We don't have those episodes available online, but if we ever get them up there, you should listen to our entire run of MacGyver we did a couple years ago, because there are some true gems in there. Absolutely.
Yes, I've heard you talk many times about the lost archives.
Or don't listen to the first three seasons.
Yes, we talk about the archives, but then the archives never actually show up, so it's all set.
It's our MO. We talk about all these wonderful things and don't do anything about it.
That's what our listeners have come to love. We're all talk. We break promises basically on a weekly basis. We are frequent promise breakers, I think for sure.
Well, you promised to have me on this show like 6 months ago, and you're making good on it. So
at this point now in the show, Greg, I'm gonna ask you, how has your week been, my friend? How have you been?
My week's been good. I mean, uneventful. It's ending. Well, it's not ending. It's still in the middle. It's getting cold. That's something. But it's been an easy week. It's been, you know, whatever. Nothing really. I have nothing to report other than I'm hunkering down for the storm tomorrow. We'll see. But yeah, you know, status quo, I suppose.
Are you going into work tomorrow or are you staying home?
I don't know. See, they make the call at like 5 a.m. whether to shut down everything or not.
Oh, okay.
So kind of playing it by ear to see how bad the storm is. And if it turns out that we close, I'll wait and then go in later in the day to clean up. But if not, I'll have to like piece it together. I don't know. Yeah.
All right.
Days like this are always tricky because I have no idea what's going to happen.
Randy, you are fully remote right now. Is that correct?
I am.
Yeah. And have you been remote since March?
I have. Yeah. Since like March 16th or whatever it is. I go into the office like, you know, one or two days a month.
Okay.
Just because there's a few things that I can't do from home.
Sure. Absolutely.
But most of it has just been me and the two cats.
All right. Absolutely. I'm actually, for the first time since working at this job in 2 years, I actually have a snow day tomorrow. I will be technically working from home, which entails me checking the voicemail from the office to make sure that none of our patients are in dire need of a clinician. So I basically have to check the voicemail once an hour. And that's my day tomorrow. So I'll be home and I'm really excited about it.
You going to snowblow your backyard and vomit again?
Did you listen to last week's episode, Randy?
I haven't listened to the whole thing.
So did you get to the story about me snowblowing the backyard and then vomiting uncontrollably afterwards?
I think I missed that part. Did you talk about your plowing your neighbor's driveway too?
I did. So it was that episode, but later in the episode, I talk about snowblowing a path to the oil tank. And then I pushed too hard that I got sick and vomited.
Well, I will say, as someone who works for an oil company, I appreciate that you were snowblowing a path to your oil tank.
We got the same oil guy who comes every time, and he's had double ankle replacements. And I'm just like, I feel so bad watching this guy struggle. It's like, you know what? I was like, I'll suffer the 200 yards to get across the backyard. So I snowblow it now for the sake of
life. Your backyard is not 200 yards long. I mean, you're snowblowing 100 feet at the most.
Fine, Greg. 400 yards. No, it's 400
and,
yards.
And I didn't know ankle replacements were a thing. That's impressive.
Yeah, double ankle replacements. And I felt bad because last year he got out of the car as I had moved my car for him. And he got out of the car around the back of the oil truck, slipped and fell and went down half the driveway. And I just rolled the windows up in the car and waited.
Oh, Jesus. You're supposed to sand your driveway.
Well, he showed up like before 8.
You're just a liability.
I'm sorry. Guys, gentlemen.
Yes.
Yes.
I don't know about you guys, but I am really itching and really excited to talk about tonight's episode. You guys want to get into it?
Yes, please.
I think you should take a shower to get rid of the itching, and let's talk about that show.
Well, I'm going to shower while you guys talk about it, but here we go, guys. It is Knight Rider, Season 4, Episode 19, Fright Night.
From the award-winning podcasters Ciampa and Klein, creators of the Knight Rider years, comes another dubiously researched and lazily executed podcast focusing on the 1980s classic Airwolf. Ciampa and Klein, the Airwolf years, will no doubt entertain and leave you with more unanswered questions than what you started with. Find them at www.ciampaklein.com or Facebook/ciampaklein or on Apple Podcasts. The feed for Ciampa and Klein, the Knight Rider years, will soon become Ciampa and Klein, the Airwolf years. Put on your eye patch and aviator sunglasses and strap in for another weekly drip feed of 80s television, crude humor, and uninsightful commentary with Ciampa and Klein, the Airwolf years.
All right, now you guys can't see this because we're not on video tonight, but Eva is sitting, my youngest daughter is sitting on the other side of the table with headphones on, and she's just listening to this entire conversation happening right now for the last 20 minutes, and she's laughing hysterically to herself. And I'm getting a good chuckle out of the fact that she's just like listening to us have a conversation about nothing.
Wonderful. Hi, Eva.
She heard. Oh, that's right. I was like, she heard you, but she's got headphones on, so that's okay. Yeah. All right, so this episode... this episode was the absolute best. It was one of the best episodes I've seen in season 4. It was a complete rebound from last week's garbage dump. God, this was such a good episode.
So much fun. It brought the show right back. Yeah, last week was a major low point, and I was dubious about what was going to keep going. But yep, it redeemed itself. Thoroughly happy with this one.
Randy, did you you had texted me I think Tuesday morning or Monday morning that you were watching it, and you said you had already had a ton of notes. How many notes did you end up having over the course of the 48 minutes?
I took a ton. I have like maybe a page worth of one-liner notes.
All right.
And it most of it is snarky comments.
Hey, that's usually how most of our notes go, so you're in
all out of love, just like you
you're
guys
in
mentioned.
Good company. Now, are you guys familiar with the actual lore of the Phantom Stage? Like, apparently this is like a real thing. Like, Stage 28, like, it has this legend about it that involves this entity known as the Phantom. Have you guys heard of this before?
No, that's new to me.
No, I haven't heard of it. I'm an actor, but I'm a stage actor. So the film stage set is completely different.
So apparently, I did a little deep digging because I was really loving this episode. Apparently, the Phantom Stage does have reports of it is a classic sound stage in Hollywood, and apparently, the story goes is that there have been sightings of a caped figure that has been seen running around the catwalks above the stage. And the report here is that part of this Phantom Stage is the original sets of the Paris Opera House's production of The Phantom of the Opera starring Lon Chaney. So the story is that the Phantom is actually Lon Chaney repeating his most famous role after he died in 1930, and he just never left the Phantom Stage.
Oh, that's something else. I kind of like to think that it's actually still Lon Chaney in reality.
Oh, it's just like reanimated, or he just never died?
He just never died. It's like his holy grail. He can't cross the seal. He can't leave the building. So
yeah, it's his retirement gig.
He's there for eternity. He just keeps getting older. Totally.
Okay. I mean,
he just keeps getting older. So maybe that's why they don't see him as much. It takes him longer to run across the catwalk.
I mean, this guy
Which doesn't make sense. They'd see him more then. Forget it. Forget it.
This Phantom in this episode had no problem getting around those catwalks. He was
very spry.
He was
very
a nimble little cat. And I don't know about you guys, but I pretty much had the Phantom pegged from the first time we see the character show up on screen. I knew who it was. I don't know. I'm just saying.
I held out. But one of the times he showed up on screen, I was like, okay, it's got to be him. Just because of one line that he said. And yeah, it became pretty obvious, but it was fun.
Okay, so we got to go through this a little bit, like point by point for the most part. So the whole episode takes place, for the most part, on the set of like this big budget Western. And I'm telling you, like, what Western have you seen that revolves around like massive explosions in the like... That is, like, ridiculous, the way this episode opens, for sure.
Have you ever watched Bugs Bunny?
There weren't that many anvils, though. Oh, I'm thinking maybe Wile E. Coyote or Roadrunner.
Same family.
And I got,
but you're right. Yeah. There are a lot of explosions.
Well, and that's sort of what triggers the initial problem over the first part of the episode, because the special effects coordinator was only supposed to see four explosions go off, but something happened, and a fifth explosion goes off, and it injures... the star of the movie, whose name is Travis. And Travis looks suspiciously like...
Oh, Travis.
Looks suspiciously like Michael Knight, does he not?
My fourth note says, Travis looks like Michael. I know where this is going.
He absolutely does.
Right? Right. Like, without even reading the synopsis, like, everyone knows where this is going to go. And, Greg, I texted you earlier when I said that he looks suspiciously like Michael. Apparently, the actor who played Travis... was David Hasselhoff's real life stunt double over the course of the show.
Oh, that's interesting.
Wow.
Which I think was a fun little reversal.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. And I thought it was a fun little reversal when, you know, obviously later in the episode, Michael volunteers to take over for Travis as the stunt double on the film. I just thought that was a really fun kind of role reversal for him.
Michael's really into expanding horizons and doing role reversal.
Also, can we talk about the fact that I think Michael should just stroll through every movie set he goes on as an extra? I just think he would, I just think it would work out. I mean, because this... there's a lot of movie references and there's a lot of stuff happening on this movie lot that we see over the course of the episode. Greg, we've talked about this for years, mm-hmm. that the Back to the Future lot has been used in numerous episodes, and we 100% see the movie theater at that climax of the film when Doc Brown goes back in time and runs right through the movie theater and disappears.
Well, you also, when Michael's driving around, you see the clock tower. It's all right there. It's the same.
Yeah.
So it makes me think that they shot a lot
it's
of
it's covered
Knight
by
Rider.
A big tree, but yeah, it's there.
Yeah, yeah. And the clock tower, the tower itself is gone. It's only part of the building.
Right.
But yeah, and because remember from season one, I think it was the third episode that they shot there too.
Yeah.
A lot of it took place on this lot. This is like the fourth season. It's the fourth season. They're kind of chugging along. I'm wondering if they decided to do an episode like this on the lot that they were shooting at anyway, because it was cheaper. Like, oh, let's do a show about a movie, and we don't really have to go anywhere or do anything or hide anything. All we got to do is shoot the script here and just do it. You know what I mean?
Hey, we've only got three episodes left.
It mm-hmm. makes you wonder, where did they blow out? Did they blow all their budget last week on the lava set? Like, is that where the money went for the season?
You know, wouldn't it be funny if they actually did that? Like, the first version of that episode was they actually made a lava set and actually got, like, molten rock. And they blew all their budget on that, and it didn't work because everything melted. So they did it with models instead. And that's what we see. There's a whole secret backstory.
I think that's amazing. Yes, absolutely. Okay, so the idea is that this is the fourth accident that has happened in the last 3 weeks on this film set. And there have been reports of a hooded figure seen on the lot. And there's now talk coming back up that the legendary Phantom of Stage 28 has something to do with all of this sabotage on the film set. Mind you, they've gone, what was it, $20 million over budget already on this film, which was about, it's almost $50 million adjusted for inflation. Like, that's a lot of money that they've gone over budget for this movie.
It's a blockbuster, though.
It is a blockbuster. What was the name of it? I can't remember.
Something Sky. What was it?
I don't remember either.
Oh, darn it.
Raging Sky?
Yeah, something like that. Raging Sky.
Okay.
But the way they were talking about it, they were talking as if it had already been made. Like, I don't know. Unless that was the movie that the Phantom came from, You remember there was one film way back when, like, called Raging Sky or something, where the main one of the actors didn't get the part and then vowed to have it never get made, so went crazy and like sabotaged it. I don't, you know, I watched this yesterday and I have no idea.
My notes don't make sense either. So I do want to talk about when Michael's strolling around the lot. He walks past a guy in a safari outfit who's been impaled by a spear and tries to get into the payphone. Did anyone else notice that guy?
It's note it. Number 7.
Yes, it was amazing. It was like a pike.
What was your note, Randy? What did your note say?
I just wrote telephone booth spear guy.
I want to know what his story is. What
was it was such a stupid bit.
What?
But it was still funny.
Oh yeah.
It was great. Like, it's like zooming on like the camera's following Michael, and then there's this dude with like a 8-foot spear through him trying to get in a payphone booth and he can't because he's got a spear through him. It's like, oh, it was great.
It's the 1980s version of Austin Powers trying to get the golf cart out of the hallway.
Yes, that's exactly what it was.
Totally.
Oh my god, that's freaking amazing. Okay, so here's where I start to notice that this is what's about what this is when I pick apart the fact that we're about to meet the villain, but we don't know it yet. So here we meet Edward Kent, who's one of the producer's secretaries, and he's played by Robert Englund, who is at this point in 1986, I believe he has already made 3, maybe 4 Nightmare on Elm Street films. So he is a well-established name, and I'm thinking, I can't imagine a high-profile star like Robert Englund is only going to be relegated to the role of this flamboyant secretary in a Hollywood producer's office. I don't know. Maybe I'm just crazy.
Well,
yeah, I looked it up, actually, and this happened between the second Nightmare on Elm Street and the third Nightmare on Elm Street.
Okay. So.
But it was like 2 years after the first.
But he's been well established at this point. Like, people know him as Freddy Krueger. He's got 2 movies under his belt. So I'm just like, you're not just going to throw this guy into a movie and no one's going to. He's already known as the villain. Like, he's been stereotyped as like this bad guy. I called it from the second I saw him show up on screen. 100%.
You're good. I waited longer.
Greg, what were you going to say a couple minutes ago? I heard you.
Oh, no. I thought you said 1986. Maybe I'm off. Is that when this was shot? This was 86?
This was released in 86.
Okay, yeah.
So we imagine it was probably filmed maybe late 85, early 86.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. So, yeah. So then MacGyver, when we keep talking about that, when Robert Englund was in MacGyver playing what's his name to get shot in the stomach, that was. So he had already done a lot of Nightmare on Elm Street by then.
Yeah, because MacGyver, that was season 1 MacGyver, 85. So he's already had, he still had 1 or 2 Nightmare on Elm Streets under his belt. So yeah, but although he did play a good guy in that, and he just got shot in the stomach.
Yeah, terrible. Poor guy.
I love the next scene, because so Michael walks in to meet with the producers, because he's trying to figure out what's going on, and like who this phantom is. And one of the producers, his name is Gavin, looks at Michael and goes, oh, you here for the beach picture? It's down the hall. And I'm like, I'm thinking to myself, is this like a Baywatch reference? Like, is how far away from Baywatch were we at the, you know?
I thought the same exact thing.
And I just, like, at this point, I had visions of Michael just being like, what are you talking about, beach? And he takes his shirt off and just stands there with nothing on. I don't know. That was just.
Well, this is also the point where I made a note. Did Michael forget how to button shirts?
Oh, he's just never known how to button his shirt.
His chest hair.
God, he's never. No.
His chest hair pushes. He can't button the shirt. Just pushes it out.
Okay, so he talks to the woman, and you know, there are reports that the Phantom might be this guy named Dennis Darrow, who was the original Phantom, according to the episode, but he died like 20 years ago. So I love this. I texted you right after this moment, Greg. So Michael walks back outside after the meeting, and a motorcyclist comes out of nowhere, attempts to run Michael over, knocks him to the ground. Kit then chases the motorcyclist, which causes it to crash. So when Michael unmasks the motorcyclist, it's not human, it's a robot and a bomb.
It just blows up.
It's Mr. Roboto.
It is Mr. Roboto, and I'm just like thinking to myself, like, this Phantom. He's clearly this Phantom is like a tech wizard, because he's creating fully working mechanized robotic motorcycle drivers that are also bombs. Like, it just makes, it made no sense, but loved it.
I mean, this was years from the self-balancing Segway invention. Yeah. So, I mean, he learned how to ride a motorcycle.
We learn later on that there's a lot more. It's not, the Phantom is just the tip of the iceberg. There's a whole nother organization going on behind there that, you know, must have made that robot motorcyclist. But we don't learn anything about it. That's fine.
Greg, you gave it away because that it is literally the organization that is behind this.
Oops, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to ruin the episode.
Do you think the organization is like the evil twin of the Foundation? Do you think that's what this is?
Oh, yes. Oh, I love it. Yes, there has to be.
I just think that's the way it has.
Yes, the nemesis. It's the organization.
But we never know. We never find anything else out about the organization. It's just that the organization is very mad that. Oh, excuse me. I'm sorry. That was an eggnog burp. Oh, God. Guys, I already drank all my eggnog. I drank.
Me
it's
too.
It's like candy. It drank it way too fast. My question to you guys is,
It's like egg candy.
Should I text Lucy and ask her to bring me down the eggnog and brandy so I don't have to go upstairs and I can do it while I'm recording? Or should I just nix it and not drink too much more of it?
Do whatever you want. I don't care.
I mean, that's what having kids is all about, is having them do your chores.
Yeah,
for you, right?
Exactly. Oh, by the way, I renamed Lucy in my phone Greg Stink.
You turd.
I'm sorry. Okay, so Michael goes and talks to Sam Clifford, who's like this—he's like this elderly special effects supervisor who's like really meticulous about his special effects. Kit scans the wiring of one of the explosives on the faulty bomb, and the guy's like, "Wow, there were supposed to be four.
No, it's the control box.
Yeah, four charges were only supposed to go off, but a fifth one went too." And Kit's like, "Oh, Michael, the fourth circuit was rewired into two." I'm like, "Oh, what? Okay, sure."
Well, you see the Phantom in the beginning, tinkering with it and like obviously added some sneak circuit with a radio transmitter in it to set off some other explosive that he previously buried under the ground somewhere. Perfect.
Okay. I'll go with that, Greg. I like it.
Yeah. Note number 13 for me is Kit scans the circuits in the remote controlled detonation box via Michael's watch.
Yes. There's a lot of those moments throughout, just the most ass backwards way that you could possibly. Okay, cool. Nope, that's fine. Let's move along, Michael. So they're doing like a big shoot today. Go ahead, Greg. What were we going to say?
Nothing.
Oh, okay. So they're doing this big shoot. It's the day of the big shoot on stage 28. And, you know, Michael heads over there and he wanders into the empty sound stage and he's looking around. And this building is filled with like hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of film props and set pieces. And Michael radios back to Kit and he's like, "Oh, well, Kit, there's so much stuff in here. There's enough stuff to make a Conan 3, 4, and 5. I'm like, "What? Okay." I mean, I'd pay to see them, but just like that's what the script writers came up with.
Well, I was really hoping that Kit would like.
They were tired at that point.
Start
man.
Getting like Hollywood eyes and want to start being an actor and start like, you know, trying to do Shakespeare and stuff. That would have been fun.
Well, at one point, doesn't he dim his, he tints his windows and Michael asks why. And doesn't Kit say something about like he's cooling off or he's like sunshading or what does he say?
Something about Hollywood and sunglasses. Yeah, I don't remember. But yeah, he's driving around with tinted windows, which makes me think that's the only version of the car that they had that day was tinted windows, because that was totally dialogue put in afterwards.
Oh, God, yes. Well, and I wanted more, like you said, Greg, I wanted more of that, like, Kit getting this like Hollywood star-struck moments, and I wanted more of like this like, "Oh, I'm putting on my shades because my future is so bright" type of moments with Kit. I wanted to see more of that. I thought that would have been amazing.
Yeah.
As Michael is wandering around the empty soundstage, he is attacked once again by the Phantom, firing a bow and arrow at Michael. So he's also an expert marksman, except he misses, but that's okay.
Well, this is the first time we actually see the Phantom in glorious slow motion shooting two arrows at Michael. And I'm like, "Oh, look, he's a Sith Lord. Perfect."
And he had it was a clear mask. I almost thought it was like a V for Vendetta type mask, but you could very clearly see his facial features behind the mask. So it's not really doing a great job hiding who this person is.
True.
So the masked man, the Phantom, disappears. Kit scans the area and he finds no evidence that anyone has left the theater. No one has gone in, no one has gone out, and, you know, it's that, of course, everyone's like, oh, is it really the Phantom? Like, of course, I'm thinking watching it in the 80s, people would really start freaking out like, oh, my gosh, is that really a Phantom? Is he really a ghost? Did you guys think he was a real ghost?
No.
No.
Okay.
No, never.
What? Okay.
He's a Sith Lord.
Was I the only one who bought into that? I'm sorry.
Okay. Darth Maul.
So then there's some gargly, garbagey bullshit about insurance policies being taken out on the movie. And one of the stars got more money taken out on her. I didn't pay attention. I just wanted to see more of the Hollywood stuff. Like, what? Anyone want to jump in on the insurance stuff?
Well, Michael's trying to find a motive, and you know, he's trying to figure out who, if the movie doesn't get made, who gets the payoff, who benefits from that. And it turns out that nobody does. Like, everyone, you know, there's no like benefit to canceling the movie. But then they learn quickly that, oh, the studio took an extra $4 million policy out on the main actress that she didn't even know about. So they're like, oh, well, maybe they're going to try to make money by getting her injured. You know, so Michael's just trying to figure out who would benefit from all of it. And he's not coming up with much because there's nothing really to do. I mean, they've done everything correctly. I don't know.
I stopped listening because it was kind of like listening to Star Wars talk about federal trade spice routes, and I just gave up listening. I just had nothing. I wanted nothing to do with it. So thanks for clarifying, Greg.
Oh, anytime. I'm into the mundane.
So at this point, like, Michael is now talking to the film star. Her name is Liz, and she's kind of getting herself ready for the shoot. And you know, Michael tells one of the producers, his name is Gavin, he tells the producer, he's like, listen, I'm going to go check out the rest of the set for any sign of the Phantom. And as Michael walks away, we see the Phantom like appear above Liz's makeup table, and he cuts a rope and drops a light down on top of her makeup table and almost kills her. And then, of course, the Phantom runs and nobody really sees what happens. They just see this light come crashing down on top of
her. But Michael, like, he runs around and like tackles her out of the way while her whole makeup setup comes crashing down on top of almost on top of her. And the only thing she has to say is, I broke a nail.
Yeah.
And then that's it. And everyone's like, oh, well, this happens every day. And they all kind of go back to their business.
Note number 16, quote, I broke a nail, quote, ugh.
Yes, ugh. Well, and I feel bad because Bonnie was relegated to the semi in this episode, and she has kind of not a similar moment, but like a moment of like where she really wants to be part of the action. And like, she tells Michael, like, why can't I come out there with you? I've always wanted to be part of a big Western. And she's really excited. And then RC pulls out this sexist, well, you got to let the man do what the man's got to do. I'm like, come on.
Oh, it was so bad.
It was awful.
Yeah. I was like, so what are you talking about? Yeah. And like, you see Bonnie's just like broken heart. And she's just like, oh, I got to hang out here again with Devin. Jesus.
Like, and Devin, who has nothing, like, Devin had, well, he had a few things to do, but he really wasn't that important to the course of the story. But yeah, like, that's what it was. It was like, oh, great, you're gonna leave me here with Devin again so we can play another round of Parcheesi again. Like, actually,
I like Parcheesi.
I've never played Parcheesi before.
I do too.
What do we think Devin's favorite board game is? Where do we go with this? What does he like? Do you think he likes Pinochle? Is he a gin rummy guy? Like, what do we think?
Oh, I think he's a backgammon guy.
No, I know the
What
answer.
Is it, Greg? What do you got?
Oh, backgammon. Oh, that's a good one. That's a good one. Dave, I think it's something that harkens back to our early days, not early days, maybe 10 years ago.
Oh, no.
The Spices of the World game.
Oh, my God. Spices of the World. What a weird freaking game. But that's the thing. Okay, so Devin would probably understand completely how, like, spice trades and, like, the spice routes across the... Yeah, you know what? Devin would be a Spices of the World guy. Devin likes them spices.
So the Spices of the World game was made by McCormick, you know, yep, the spice company. And it's kind of like, I don't know, around the world with spices. And it actually had all the little playing pieces were actual little vials of the spices. It was kind of cool.
Now all I've got is the thought in my head of Devin playing Cards Against Humanity these days.
Oh, yes. Oh,
man. You know what? I'm going to put it out onto the social medias for our listeners. I want you to tell us what the worst combination cards Devin would play in Cards Against Humanity. If you don't listen to the episode, I'm going to post it on social. Tell me what it would be.
Or
we'll come back next week. And Randy, think about it. and send us a message about it too.
I'm also curious. So what would Devin play, but also what would Devin choose as the combination that would make him laugh, or that, like, what, you know?
Exactly. Okay. Exactly. Sure. It would be amazing. No, that's our question of the week. We haven't done that in a while, Greg. What cards would Devin play and what cards would he use in Cards Against Humanity? I love it. I'm already thinking about it. And I might come up with one by the end of the episode. Who knows? Okay. So Michael, as we expected, Randy, you put it in your note too, and I think you said it. Michael volunteers himself as the stunt double so the production can continue because Travis has been injured and Liz has had an attempt on her life. So, as is the true Clark Kent way, Edward Kent shows up minutes later that he just heard about what happened with Liz, and he tells Michael that he's waded into a pool of sharks and he better be careful. What do we think he's talking about?
This is... exact moment where I'm like, oh, it's him. Totally. He's like, I just came back from the set and I heard what happened. I'm like, okay, it's him. And that's where it really solidified it for me. That was my moment.
Was that some shark foreshadowing?
Well, and yeah. That's one of my notes underneath was, wading into a pool of sharks. What are we talking about, sir?
I think it would have been more, I think it would have been much more funny if he said, you're wading into a pool of shark.
Didn't you mean to pluralize that, Eddie? No, you weren't gonna.
No,
Michael, you've waded into a pool of shark. Oh, okay. All right. Well, moving on. I'm gonna go ahead and figure out who the Phantom is. And so this is when he calls RC3 in for help. He's like, you know, RC, you got to come in and give me a hand with this. And Bonnie gets really pissed because she wants to be a part of it. And it was just, it made me feel really bad for Bonnie again, because I really do love Bonnie quite a bit. That's all I had to say.
Okay.
Anyone else?
I certainly wish we had more of Bonnie. Right. I wish there was more Bonnie, and I wish they gave her better roles.
Does Bonnie always look like she's about to do an aerobic workout?
Yes. Yes. In fact.
Minus the leg warmers.
In fact, her hair gets bigger every episode because I think she's really sweating to the oldies.
I mean, it's been a really long time since I've watched the show.
Yeah, no, her outfits have been getting poofier and more coordinated.
Oh, I wanted to bring up the two old timers that were playing cards kind of throughout this episode as well.
This was our running gag on the episode, is like Kit's just like helping these two old time stunt guys learn how to play cards. Like, it was just very strange, like, interstitial throughout the course of the episode. I think I liked it, though.
Now you guys might be a little too young to know this, but the guy who played Buck with a very distinct voice is a very famous actor.
I recognize the voice.
And was Mr. Haney on Green Acres back in the day.
Okay. Oh, my gosh.
He was also the Sheriff of Nottingham in Disney, Disney's Robin Hood.
Oh, that's what it is. Yep.
And he was one of the card-playing characters in Back to the Future 3.
Oh, he was in Back to the Future 3?
The same character, pretty much.
Wow. Wow,
he probably just never left that set.
You want to bet that's probably what they were probably playing as? Like, he was just... Because they talk about being there and, like, just doing this job for, like, 50 years.
Oh, that's great. I love
that's
it.
Really
that's a little, like, old Hollywood right there, you know?
I like that. Okay, so it's at this
Maybe
point...
Maybe it was an homage to them.
It's at this point that we find out that Gavin, one of the producers, dun, 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 he's in cahoots with the Phantom, Greg and Randy. What? Who saw that coming? That there would be a
shocker. What? Bullshit.
Come on. I call it, man. And at this point, too, is if anyone couldn't figure out that the Phantom was Edward Kent, you can very clearly see it's him behind those fluorescent lights and the mask, like 100%.
And his personality has completely changed. 100%. Like, to complete psychotic crazy person.
And his Phantom voice sounds an awful lot like Freddy Krueger.
Yes. Yes, it does.
It sure does.
I was actually surprised. So, because Freddy Krueger, like, his whole tagline was just like, I'm coming for you, bitch. Like, I'm like, I know they can't say it, but, like, I just wish there was some variation of that.
You better watch out for yourself, Michael.
You know, and I'm wondering if maybe that's why... Wonder why they use that plastic face mask, because it's kind of Krugerish, you know. He's got the voice. He just puts on this menacing character, but he's got that weird monk robe on.
Oh my gosh.
I'm going to get you, Michael Knight.
One of the other things I wrote down about this was 1, 2, Phantom's coming for you. 3, 4, better hit the floor.
Well, and Michael does in the next scene, because when he goes to search the catwalks. So this Phantom has put a lot of thought and effort into, like, he's rigged all of these explosives across the soundstage. Because when Michael goes across the soundstage and the catwalk in the next scene, he has rigged that one section to blow up, and he blows it up on Michael, and Michael's just left, like, hanging, like, 100 feet up in the air.
It's perfect.
Yeah, but he grabbed that rope real quick.
He had those reflexes. He knew exactly what he was doing.
Can you imagine, like, the blisters and the rope burn he got sliding halfway down that rope before he stopped? No one ever talks about that. He just has really calloused, meaty hands.
So I love the next one too, because he calls Kit. Of course, Kit comes in to help Michael, but Kit just obliterates all these movie props on his way and just like crashes right through all these set pieces. So just so he can save Michael. I loved it. It was great.
When the Phantom was about to walk off, he says, you know, it's just, I don't remember what he said, but just like every Bond villain, the Phantom said his snarky line and then left before the job was finished.
Why don't you hang around, Michael? Like,
oh, you're going to die. I'm just going to walk away, say something snarky and walk away.
Oh, God. It's so good. Like, they don't make shows like this anymore. It's just the absolute best. And so I don't know if anyone else saw this next part coming, but when Gavin is getting ready to leave for the night, the Phantom is in the backseat of his car, which is where, Greg, this is the point where he tells Gavin that the organization is backing Gavin, and it's not his money that he's investing into the film, and Michael's involvement is making the organization nervous. And then Edward shoots Gavin and kills him and gets out of the car and walks away.
Yeah, oh, I don't know. Okay. Like, what was the point of that? It doesn't make sense. He should have just like crop dusted him to death, like kept cracking him off before he got in the car. And then Gavin gets in the car and just like chokes out and dies. But anyway, so we're talking Bond. Yeah. But we were talking about, so it's very James Bondian, like particularly like the more recent ones with Daniel Craig, like that organization, what's the name of it or whatever, that crime syndicate or whatnot. It's the same sort of thing. It's just some kind of amorphous. Exactly. It's just some amorphous crime world out there, you know, that has no face. There's no leader. It just exists. You know, I think it's great.
Yeah, it's awesome. But you know what, though, Greg, it's like it doesn't really matter because we never hear about the organization again, because in the next scene, Michael is prepping for his big moment on set. They're going to redo the scene that injured Travis at the beginning of the episode. RC is there to help, but he's hitting on a woman who can't start a golf cart. Like, he's doing nothing.
He's like, oh, I'm going to help you out. Can I help you with that engine, ma'am?
My exact quote from my notes is RC3 hitting on the woman, helpless woman bit is a bit barfy.
Yes. Well, and what makes it even barfier is that the woman who played the woman in the golf cart is Peter Paros, the guy who plays RC3. It's his real life wife in this scene, which makes it even cringier.
Really? I love it. I didn't even know that.
It's his actual wife. Yes.
Oh, that's great.
I told you I did a lot of deep digging into this episode. I dug way more than any other episode.
Man, that was
all you need to do is turn this key.
Yeah, it was so funny though, because he's like, I'm sorry, there's a motor and it's not an engine, and he starts, oh, pop the hood. Oh, it's in the back. Oh, okay. You know, and he's just like, he's trying to be all cool and know what's going on, but she's just like, no, nope. Yeah. Just turn the key.
Just before the scene starts. Oh no, actually no, the scene starts, and as things are getting ready to roll, RC happens to see the Phantom in the distance, like jumping across some train cars, like a little ways off from the set.
Oh, it's amazing.
Oh, it's great. He's just like, you see the cape like waving behind him in the background. It's amazing. Oh, it was awesome.
But I love how
set parkour.
Yeah, exactly. And you have to have a cape and you have to run. Like, it wouldn't be cool if he was just kind of walking and being stealthy. No, you have to like run full tilt everywhere and make grand gestures, you know? Yes.
That's what Phantoms do.
Yes. Somehow the Phantom ends up behind RC3, because when he goes to investigate, he like walks around the corner and the Phantom shows up behind him and just knocks R3 to the ground. RC to the ground.
R3. Like,
R3.
I know. Of R3, course he does.
R3D3. R3.
What?
I don't know.
R3PO.
Okay, now, the next scene, this part may have been, and I keep saying I love this next part, but this could have been the best part of the episode. So Michael begins the action scene as it went before. He's running through the barn. The explosions are going off on the left and the right. You know, he gets a little further into the scene than the star and the other stuntman, and he starts like opening fire. He's got like an Uzi? Is that what he's holding in this scene?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. Yeah. It's like the gun of the 80s.
What the hell kind of Western is that?
Yeah, I think that's what it was.
Fuck.
Well, I think it's I think it takes place in the West, but it's not clearly not a period piece.
Obviously not. And so the Phantom shows up. The Phantom just drives onto the set and starts like opening fire on Michael. Michael starts opening fire on him. He gets into Kit, and then they drive off after the Phantom, and there's this amazing chase through the Hollywood backlot. And I have to ask, it was unbelievable. And I have to ask,
it was so
when
good.
The hell did the Phantom have time to set all these booby traps? Because he's got the water rushing, the tree falling down, that weird spinning light tunnel that they drive through and he can't get out of it. Like,
yeah, oh my God.
What the shit?
Fantastic. Well, I'm gonna have to say that since he was there, he had a lot of time, since the Phantom actually worked at the studio, so he had an intimate knowledge of how the place worked and might have had ways to get access to certain stuff. So I can believe that. But the fact that he had this like remote control that operated everything, again, kind of back to a James Bond sort of thing, you know, and why would this stuff even work? The studios are pretty careful with that stuff. You know, they're not just going to let, you know, it work when they're not shooting anything there. They're not going to be able to flood a set with that whole deluge bit. I don't know. Like all this crazy shit that happened. Oh, but it didn't matter. It doesn't matter. It was so much fun.
They don't just let any Phantom do that.
No, not at all. Okay.
No.
So they get to this bridge. And the Phantom gets out, and Michael gets out and starts chasing. And then the Phantom starts attacking Michael with a spear on the bridge. And then at some point, the director of the Western shows up and starts filming this scene on the bridge. And he's like really getting off watching it. He's like so excited about what's happening. And he tells Kit, Michael tells Kit to start some sort of distraction. So does he put a cassette tape in, or does he just use his auto harmonic synthesizer?
Yeah,
I can't remember.
He uses his harmonic synthesizer to play the Jaws theme.
Yes.
While summoning a gigantic mechanical shark.
Now, do you think it was actually Bruce? Do you think it was the actual prop from Jaws from 1975?
Oh, it could have been. No. I didn't think that thing survived very well. I didn't think it was in good, like, it had a lot of trouble.
I'm just
problems.
Like, you know, and I said this to you this morning, Greg. I'm like,
yeah.
I can't believe I'm saying, believe I'm saying this, but like, my favorite part in Knight Rider was when Jaws popped out of the water.
It was great. It's so weird. It's so absurd, but it didn't cross my mind as like out of place. Like, of course they're going to pull a giant shark out of the water.
The pool of shark.
The pool of shark. Yes, they pulled the pool of shark out.
Oh, I love it.
And well, so, I mean, obviously, this was shot on the Universal Studios set, this stuff was there anyway to entertain the tourists.
Do you think that the whole point of this distraction was to get the Phantom to shark himself?
Ooh, Greg, I think it's time for you to leave.
Okay.
See yourself out, sir. No, I'm just kidding. All right, we're almost done. So he distracts the Phantom just enough so that we assume he's just going to get arrested, because we don't actually see any closure to the Phantom. And then, because of the moment on the bridge, does the director offer Michael a role in the next film?
Oh, he sure does.
He absolutely does. A lead role in a beach film. In the beach film.
That's right. The beach film.
And Michael's all over it.
Oh, yeah. And then, like, RC jumps in what'd you say?
Nothing. No, I just said yes.
Oh, I thought you said something, and I just waited silently with a weird look on my face, and nobody can see it because I'm alone down here in the office. So the episode ends with Michael celebrating with one of the other producers on bringing down the Phantom. RC saunters in with a glass of champagne and he starts talking, and you know, they both kind of look out across the studio lot and they see what appears to be the Phantom riding a bike through the set. But Michael immediately shuts it down. And Greg, what does he say to close out the episode?
He says, nope. That is a man in a monk robe riding a bicycle.
And then and then everybody laughs and we freeze frame it and we end the episode. And that's
But like,
God, I loved this episode.
The most awkward free. They waited like a beat way too long. It's like, that's a man riding a bicycle. End scene. Like, just,
and freeze.
Just the weirdest ending.
Well, yeah, and then RC like much. Dumps his champagne out because he's probably afraid. He's thinking he's probably drunk, so he's seeing things. And oh my God, Greg, what a rebound from last week. Like, am I right?
I got to say, one of the best things, though, so Michael's there with the producer, and she's talking, and she's like, you know, Michael, when you said you were going to take me out for lunch, I thought you meant, like, something really nice, but no, Michael is there ordering hot dogs from the studio commissary, because that he wants some real food he can sink his teeth into. I loved it.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't go for the hamburger, he goes for a couple of big...
I really wanted it to be a cheeseburger, though.
I know. They've really kind of gotten away from the burger thing. They did a lot of burgers in the beginning, but... Yeah. Oh, this was fantastic.
It was a rebound from last week. Randy, what were your thoughts now watching it probably for the first time in, you know, 35 years? What were your final thoughts on the episode?
So I absolutely loved it. I watched a few months back. I watched the first, you know, two or three episodes of season one. And I just kind of rolled my eyes a little bit because it was like, oh, yes, yeah. I remember how cheesy this is. But no, this was really fun, and just all the little Easter egg extras that maybe weren't Easter eggs to people at the time, but it's like, oh, that's Back to the Future. Oh, that's the guy from Green Acres. Oh, that's Freddy Krueger. It was super fun. Super fun.
Greg, what were your final thoughts?
No, man, it was so much. It was great. And then talking about it, like you're doing all that deep dive, and Randy, you telling us the guy from Green Acres, like it's the history, I think, that's in this movie, not movie, Jesus, that's in this episode. But I think because it was shot in Hollywood as a Hollywood episode, I think it really. It lent itself to having more depth if you knew what you're looking for. So I think you got it right talking about those Easter eggs, that if you watch it with a certain set of eyes, you can get a lot more out of it. And I loved it.
Yeah, no, it was just fantastic. If they can keep up this level of energy and this level of excitement, you could tell that all the actors were completely there. If they can keep it up for the next three episodes, like, I really think we're going to finish out this series strong. Because, you know, Greg, we were saying last week, that was the first episode last week that we truly just did not enjoy of over a season that has been universally like reviled as just a poor excuse for us. Like, we have loved everything this season has had to offer. So, I mean, if they can finish it out with this level of energy, mm-hmm. I'm in it. And I don't know if they're going to continue next week. So I'm a little nervous about next week's episode.
Yeah, I'm going to ride this wave until it crashes. So I'll just remember this one till next week.
Do you want to hear what's coming up next week?
You're going to tell us.
I am going to tell you guys. Here we go. I am. I'm going to do it right now. Next week's episode is season 4, episode 20, Night of the Rising Sun. Yes.
Great.
Oh, great. Because here's another one. Devin, it has to do with a friend of Devin's, Greg.
Of course.
All right, here we go. Michael and Kit come to the aid of a friend of Devin's who is being forced out of business by a powerful Japanese businessman who is trying to abduct Nick's son, a direct descendant of the founder of an ancient terrorist cult, and wants the boy to take his place as their leader.
Oh, come on. God, you take such a good episode like this and you follow it up with that? Oh.
That's coming up next week, Greg. Are you ready for it?
I will be. Man, of course it's someone Devin knows. Okay.
Oh, it's just the best. It's just the best. All right, guys, listen, that's going to wrap it up for this week's episode. Randy, gosh, thank you so much for being a part of this show. We are so happy that you were able to make it on for us. Why don't you take a couple seconds, take a couple minutes and tell people about your current podcast and a few minutes to talk about your upcoming podcast.
Oh, sure. So my podcast is called We All Have a Story, and pretty much I I have guests on who just have interesting jobs or hobbies or things that have happened to them in life. And I had the best first guest on my very first really episode. You might know him, Dave Champa. By far the most popular episode.
Oh, I like that.
So I've had a piano tuner on. I've had somebody from a store in Portland. I've had so many different guests. I can't even remember them all right now because I'm on the spot.
I did listen to this one and I really liked it. It was the game room designer that you interviewed.
Oh yeah, my friend that owns the escape room.
That was the escape room designer. That was awesome.
Yeah, yeah. And it's just been really a really good distraction for me because I am an actor, not a professional actor, but community theater actor. And this is a really difficult time to be anybody that is doing something like that. So I needed something to do, and I knew that you were doing a podcast, and I thought, geez, I wonder if that's something that might entertain me and keep me busy. And yeah, we've released 10 episodes so far. That one comes out every other week. I'm supposed to be releasing an episode this Sunday and I don't have a guest yet.
Oh boy.
So yeah, this is the first time I've run really behind.
Okay.
And then my other podcast is with my friend Tyler, who is also an actor, and he was looking for something to do, and I tapped him for co-hosting this podcast with me called Descripted. And we are looking at and reading through all of the Pulitzer Prize winning plays since 1918, since it was first awarded. And we started with the very first one from 1918, and then we did the most recent one in 2019. And then we go back to 1919. So we kind of go back and forth in time. We just talk about the play, how it was received, where it was playing on Broadway, and how it parallels with society then and now. And it's been really fun. We've got three or four episodes of that recorded already.
Awesome.
And that's coming out in January.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that one. So and now you have an Instagram page and everything for Descripted too, right?
Yes.
Okay, good. So go ahead and find that and follow it if you can. And is it okay if I offer up, if any of our listeners are interested in getting in touch with you for We All Have a Story, would you be interested in having somebody come on from maybe our little neck of the weird woods?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, track us down on our Facebook page and send us a message there, or there's a email link there as well, and you can contact us that way.
Awesome.
I say us, it's me.
It's you, but it's great. It really is a blast. It's a bright spot in my biweekly rotation, so I really get excited every time a new episode comes up. So all right. Well, Randy, once again, thank you so much for being on the show. I can't thank you enough, and I hope you'll join us for the next run of Airwolf when we start in the next couple of weeks. Are you interested in that at all?
Oh, absolutely. I never really got into Airwolf or its adversary Blue Thunder back in the day, but I would definitely be interested in watching an episode and joining you guys.
Awesome Greg, remind me, you and I, neither of us have had any knowledge except for Ernest Borgnine of Airwolf, is that correct?
I think I actually do remember that as a kid, more of the intro and the helicopter. I remember the show, but I don't remember anything about it. I remember watching it, okay, but I don't remember it one bit.
All right. Well, we're really excited to jump in. All right, guys, listen, if you want to get in touch with us, you know how to do that. You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/JampaKlein, Instagram at Knight Rider Pod. You can find us on, I'm sorry, nope, Instagram is Knight Rider Years. Twitter is at Knight Rider Pod. You can give us a shout out on our hotline, 207-835-1954, and leave us a message about anything your little heart desires. You can find us on our website, champaKlein.com, where you will not find our archive of episodes of Mullets and Memories, but you will find every episode of the Knight Rider Years if you are interested in listening to that. But yeah, give us a shout out. We're getting ready to wrap up Knight Rider. We're jumping into Airwolf, and we're really excited to take a new journey in the next couple weeks. So with that being said, Greg, for the Knight Rider Years, I am your host, Pool of Shark.
I am your other host, Plastic-Faced Sith Lord.
Oh, man. Have a fantastic week, everybody.
I think you're in the wrong department.
Discipline has never been a problem, my dear.
Hang on to your fenders, pal.
Thinking, kid. I'm not upset.
Your pulse rate is up, your blood pressure is high, and you're gripping the steering wheel with alarming pressure.
You've been listening to a podcast of the Podfix Network. Discover more audible gems like this at podfixnetwork.com. Make sure to catch up-to-the-minute network shenanigans by following @Podfix on Twitter, official_Podfix on Instagram, @Podfix Network on Facebook. And make sure to subscribe to Podfix Presents wherever you choose to find podcasts. The Podfix Network, artist owned and loved.